So, Tom, we worked together a long time. When did you begin your involvement with the North Country Trail?
Shortly after graduating from Michigan State University with a degree in park administration, I obtained a job working for the Department of the Interior Bureau of Outdoor Recreation and as the regional public information officer. And in 1973, when the draft feasibility study for the North Country Trail was coming together and they needed to hold public meetings on that draft and proposed route, I was pulled in to help set up the public meetings and to produce a slide tape program for use at the public meetings. And that's when I became involved in the North Country National Scenic Trail. I scheduled and arranged the meetings in Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, and attended several of them. And then I had involvement as it kind of went forward to completion and had experience learning about the cutting off of Vermont from the final study report and all that went into that background, and then that resurfaced 10 or so years ago as a factor in the trail. So that's how I began involved.
So when the North Country National Scenic Trail was authorized, what steps did the National Park Service take to begin administering it?
Well, the Park Service administered the Appalachian Trail. They kind of knew that thing. And at about the same time the North Country Trail was authorized, several National Historic Trails were authorized. A few months after the North Country Trail, the Ice Age National Scenic Trail was authorized. The Park Service wasn't quite sure what to do with these things. North Country Trail was assigned to the Midwest region of the National Park Service, even though it went through three different regions. And they kind of contracted with some money to the Denver Service Center, which is the planning center for the Park Service, to create a plan for the trail. And the agency that I was working for used to be called the Bureau of Outdoor Recreation. It became the Heritage Conservation and Recreation Service. And then it was folded into the Park Service in 1981. And I was actually the first employee moved from Ann Arbor, Michigan to Omaha, Nebraska, because they had these trail plans to do. And I was the regional trails person in HCRS. And they thought, well, I think we need this guy out to help us write these trail plans. And so I was moved out there. When I got out there, and then my supervisor from Ann Arbor was moved out, and we checked with the Denver Service Center, the materials they had collected to do the plan for the trail were like the soil surveys for all the counties. And they were figuring that they had to figure out a line on the map for the North Country Trail. But we looked at it and said, hey, we've authorized with no land acquisition authority. It's fruitless to try and draw that line on the maps. And so we pulled that work back into the regional office. We went to try and writing a plan that would help the many different players that were going to be involved, public and private, come together to work on this trail and provide guidance for us to all work together, because the Park Service was not in a position to dictate what was going to happen because of those authorities that were missing. As I have said, when we sent out the draft of our plan in 1982, one of the best compliments we got back on from one of the stakeholders was, this doesn't read like a government plan. And so we wrote a lot of flexibility into the policies. We laid down almost no dictums of, you know, this is going to happen this way or that way, because we had many, many different players that were already in the trails business, public and private. They weren't all going to jump to our music if we wrote the music. The National Trail System Act provides that for the first 10 years after Congress authorizes a National Scenic or National Historic Trail, that there shall be an advisory council. And we had some people from New York City that one of the people said, now the plan needs to include that you're going to have emergency telephones all along the trail, at least every half mile. You know, like those old fire telephones, you know, that used to be on street corners.
Sure, yeah.
And I said, no, that's not really feasible, and no, we're not going to do that. And then when the advisory council came together after the plan was done, and we had a draft of our brochure, and we had information about the trail for users, and one of the people from New York City said, you didn't mention in here that they should carry a gun. And I said, they said, it's dangerous out there. You never know who you're going to meet on the trail. And I said, actually, our idea would be that nobody's carrying guns on the trail. In the 1980s, of course, we completed the comprehensive management plan for the trail. The Washington office leadership of the Park Service, because we were not authorized to buy any land, considered that this would not be a unit of the national park system. And they believed that once we mailed out copies of the management plan to all the prospective players and stakeholders, that the Park Service responsibility for the North Country Trail was done. I'm getting phone calls. We're getting letters from people along these three trails, Lewis and Clark, Ice Age, North Country. How are we going to handle those? They were in the process of dissolving the division I was in because the plans were done. But I persuaded them that they really needed to keep one person here, and I was happy to be that person. And
that's in Omaha.
In Omaha, yeah. So that was the 1980s, and in the 1990s, we finally published the first Park Service park brochure for the North Country Trail with no help from the agency. Another important thing I did in the 1990s was hire you.
Thank
because
you.
We had, for the first time, a small base budget of $50,000 for the trail that was going to continue, which gave us the confidence that we could hire a staff position devoted to the trail. Yeah, in the 2000s, Congress appropriated $500,000 for land acquisition for the North Country Trail in Wisconsin, specifying that we grant it to the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
The law specified federal agencies couldn't spend funds to buy lands, but it did not say no federal funds may be spent. And that nuance was taken advantage of by the players and got us that appropriation, which we granted to the state of Wisconsin, that they matched with their own state dollars. So Wisconsin had a good start on starting to buy lands for the trail, which wasn't happening in any other state. We also completed the Northeast Minnesota route assessment, which set the stage for changing the route in northeastern Minnesota. And we made some other route changes too in the Dayton area. The completion of the Vermont extension feasibility study, which was completed in 2013, a couple years after I retired, but I worked as a volunteer to help complete that study.
Were any of those changes or even others that you didn't think of or didn't just mention a pleasant surprise?
Yeah, I mean, the land acquisition for the North Country Trail was a complete surprise. I don't think any of us knew it was in the budget until it was passed and somebody said, hey, there's $500,000 for the North Country Trail. I had no advance notice of that. It was a complete surprise and a delightful one. The decision to take the North Country Trail through the center of Dayton, Ohio, kind of was a surprise to me. I was surprised that I liked the idea once I investigated it, because my idea of a national scenic trail was, you know, it avoids urban areas and human development, and you know that's what a national scenic trail. But you know, I came to see it a little differently, and that was a complete surprise that my mind would change. And and you know, we were together in exploring some of that.
Yes, right.
And then, of course, in the 2000s, the willingness of the Green Mountain Club to reconsider a Vermont extension was a very pleasant surprise. I didn't know whether it would ever happen, and there's great stories about how it happened too.
As I recall, you were the superintendent for the North Country Trail for close to 30 years, or maybe even a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you instigated and supported many changes in things relating to policy and legislation and so forth. What are a couple of those changes that maybe brought you the most satisfaction?
Well, in 1990, Pat Allen, who had been active in the North Country Trail Association for a long time, she lives in Grand Rapids. She succeeded in getting the first ever dedicated federal funding for the North Country Trail through her local congressman. It was not new money. It was earmarked out of existing funds, which agencies hate, of course. But it was set aside for, you know, 90,000. What she was attempting to do was what Ice Age had successfully did in 1987. She wanted that money so that the Park Service would open an office for the North Country Trail in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was kind of rooting for that because that's where I'm from. The 90,000 got earmarked, but nothing about establishing an office in Grand Rapids. So the Park Service was not going to do that without being told. So what did we do with those funds? We used some of it to publish that first brochure. But $60,000 of that money, I wanted to put in a cooperative agreement and give it to the North Country Trail Association. What I had learned in the 1980s, all volunteer organizations are not really effective if they are run by volunteers. An effective volunteer organization needs professional staff. And the Ice Age Trail had that, and I saw how that was more effective. I wanted the North Country Trail Association to step up and hire a full-time staff person. I sat down with Martha Jones, who was president of the NCTA board at the time, and persuaded her that this was the right thing to do. I mean, it was a big thing for Martha to take on, to try and hire somebody.
I bet it was.
And there was a little trepidation. I said, I'll hold your hand as much as I can. I think I participated in interviews with her. But that, to me, was the most important and satisfying change, to get them to step up with the professional staff. And, of course, now they have quite a professional staff. They hired you after you stopped working for me.
That's true.
So after 9 years of working in our office for the Park Service, much to my regret, you retired. But did you have additional involvement with the trail since that time? Do you want to say a few things about that?
I was only away from the Park Service for a few weeks, and I took a job with the North Country Trail Association, you know, our primary partner. And I worked an additional 18 years with them. I held different positions. At first, they didn't know what to call my position. They called it a trail foreman for a while. But eventually, I became one of the first three regional trail coordinators for the association. I covered Wisconsin and the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, then eventually pared back to only Wisconsin. And by the time I retired, I was working only half-time. Do you have any concerns for today or the future that you feel like sharing?
My biggest concern is that the Park Service continues to resist seeing the North Country Trail as every bit as important to the American people as the Appalachian Trail. That, of course, is a disappointment that I retired without accomplishing that change in their perspective. It's gone on now for 39 years without success. I am still concerned. That embracing of what the trail is, you know, not only in the legislative language, but the asset that this is to the American public and the recreation palette that we provide, the connections that trail makes with so many communities that national parks that are here or there, you know, don't have the opportunity to make. They aren't running through communities and linkages. And so that's a little disappointing. I'm concerned that has to happen for the North Country Trail to really, you know, take off to the next level.
I agree.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of the most important contributions you made to the trail during your time as National Park Service Superintendent?
I think that I helped set a pattern for effective partnerships for the trails. Not that I even was consciously doing it, but I think working through the relationships, creating a equity and a sense of empowerment for all the players, and making sure that I set a model for restrained leadership by the National Park Service. There are ways we could have kind of laid down the law and been inflexible on things, but we were very flexible. We understood the autonomies and the prerogatives that our partners had that we had no say over. I think that was an important contribution. Another important contribution that was more you than me, and maybe you'll mention this, was at the beginning we were distributing the Appalachian Trail handbook on how to build trails because there was nothing else in existence. And I think you're instigating and creating a North Country Trail handbook was a very important contribution from our office. But again, that was more you than me, way more.
I've always known how many significant contributions you've made to the North Country Trail. And I just want you to know that I have thoroughly appreciated all of them.
Well, thank you. And I appreciated how the good staff that I had. So thank you, Bill. If I could ask you then, when you came into the position as the Park Service Manager for the North Country Trail, what prior experience did you have with the trail and or other trails in your work for the Forest Service?
Well, you know, Tom, I really didn't have a great deal of experience with trails. I'm a forester by profession, and within the Forest Service, I was came up through the ranks and was a district ranger in two different locations, but I didn't have a lot of trail experience. I first learned about the North Country Trail when I was a district ranger on the Chippewa National Forest. In fact, I was stationed only 20 miles north of where we're sitting today in Calf Lake, Minnesota. And we used to have monthly ranger staff meetings. And my co-district ranger from Walker, Minnesota was at that meeting. And I think it was sometime in the very early 80s when he came up and in the meeting and said, you know, there's this new trail that's being talked about, and it looks like it's going to come through the Chippewa National Forest, and maybe we better start, you know, getting tuned into it a little bit. So then it was several years later, and it was probably about that time that the comprehensive plan was being written. So several years later, he came back to another one of those ranger staff meetings and said, sure enough, the National Park Service has completed this plan for the trail, and it comes through the Chippewa National Forest. And then it was in 1988, I was transferred to the Manistee Ranger District on the Manistee National Forest in Michigan. And lo and behold, on that ranger district, I had 45 miles of the North Country Trail under my responsibility. I hadn't backpacked for years, and I just decided that I was going to put together some gear and backpack my 45 miles of trail.
You know, I think I remember an early edition of the North Country Trail Association, I think it was called the newsletter at that time. You with a backpack on the front cover was the front cover, and I think that was before you came to work for us. And you must have written a story, because I still remember that you on the front cover of the magazine or newsletter.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that too. And I think there might have been a dedication of a trailhead when that picture was taken at the north end of the Ranger District.
So when you came to work for the Park Service and, you know, kind of started looking to see what we were doing, what specific needs did you identify for the trail as you began your work as trail manager?
Well, I think in the position that I had more time perhaps to dig into some of the nitty-gritty sorts of things that you as a superintendent, and you were the superintendent for three national trails, I don't think you had the time to get down into the weeds, so to speak. And
correct.
It seemed to me when I came on board that there wasn't a real good comprehensive direction or standards for the trail as far as uniformity prescribed. The comprehensive management plan left much of this very flexible and up to the individual land managing agencies. And there was a great deal of difference from state to state and even from county to county within each state. For instance, there was no uniform blaze color prescribed for the trail. There was no prescribed trail or trail structure standards. But I just felt that if it was going to be a national scenic trail, there needed to be a little bit more uniformity.
So how did you respond to these needs or recommend how the Park Service should respond to those needs?
Well, somehow I came up with this phrase that I called a thread of continuity, sort of a concept that the trail should look and feel similar, from one end to the other, no matter whose land it was on. But some things should be similar, so that if you were in New York or Michigan or North Dakota, you would know you were on the same trail. So I began developing this concept that I called the thread, and I think maybe first I had to bring it to you. I know I had to bring it to you and get your support for it. Also during that time, I was working on a team to write a joint North Country Trail Ice Age Trail Standards Handbook. But eventually we found that there was too much difference between the two trails. Even though they're both National Scenic Trails, you'd think that we'd all have the same ideas, but we found there were too many differences, and eventually I decided that I would just finish the North Country Trail Handbook on my own. The finalized title was North Country National Scenic Trail Handbook for Design, Construction, and Maintenance. And then we began widely distributing that book across the trail to all of our partners and all of our chapters, and even tracking them, who they were assigned to, so that we could make amendments from time to time and be sure that everybody got the up-to-date information.
What things did you do or implement to enhance the effectiveness of the work of the volunteers in addition to the handbook?
One of the things that I remember was eventually the National Park Service came out with what they called at that time the Challenge Cost Share Program. And I believe the budget during the early part of that program was less than about $10,000 a year, but it eventually grew to around $40,000 a year. And I was the person that was responsible to review the various applications from all the chapters and kind of decide the priorities and so forth and distribute the money to the volunteers for tools and mowers and structure construction like lean-tos or bridges and so forth. And another thing is, you know, for the first time with me being on board, you had enough staff to begin more frequent involvement out on the ground and looking into aspects of the trail management. So I traveled fairly extensively for several years there, just meeting with the various partners that we had, you know, touching base and seeing what the trail looked like in their park or forest or whatever the land was, and just establishing better relationships with them. And another important thing that happened was that at some point we arranged for a Student Conservation Association week-long training event to learn various skills from trail design, rock work, primitive bridge building, those sorts of things. And that organization, the Student Conservation Association, is renowned for preserving trail skills and particularly primitive skills working without power tools. But after we had that training, it was pretty expensive, actually, and we couldn't afford to put those on all the time. So I decided that with what I had learned and so forth and what experience I'd gained over the few years that I could probably conduct a lot of that training. So I decided to take what I learned and apply it and teach others. So I developed a whole series of training topics and traveled even more extensively to conduct that training.
I remember that training because I participated in it. I was so glad that I did because for the first time in my job, Bill, I felt like I could competently talk about trail design and construction. I did not have that background, and I was so thrilled to feel that I could talk about those topics. So that was great that you pulled that off.
I think we all learned a lot during that session.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember or not, but planning was not my favorite thing to do. I really didn't like the details of pulling teams together and endlessly going over things and the kind of planning and so forth that was necessary for producing a NEPA document, a National Environmental Policy Act document. But they were very necessary. They met the requirements of NEPA, as I said, and they provided us with a basis to determine where the trail should actually pass through a county. But when a plan was in place, I could build trail anywhere within the county and know that I was within the corridor, and eventually somehow, sometime in the future, it would tie together. Whereas without those plans, you could be creating a lot of disjointed segments.
Any thoughts about the process that we undertook in northeastern Minnesota? I mean, that was not a county, but it was several counties.
We hosted a series of what we called summit meetings, one in each state, to kind of discuss the status of the trail and problems and opportunities. And when we got to Minnesota, it came up again. The DNR again brought that up and said, that route is just not feasible. You need to be thinking about something else. And luckily, no work had ever been done on that section because it was so impractical. We decided that they were right and we ought to change the route of the trail in Minnesota. The thing is, though, that it was such a departure from the comprehensive plan that the regional office decided that it was going to have to go back to Congress for approval because it was just too big of a change. And that approval took many, many years to get done. It would get introduced and then dropped many times over. It was just a few years ago, actually, when that route change was authorized.
Took 15 years till 2019.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I knew you had a better memory on those kinds of things than I did. But it's a much better route in Minnesota, and it's actively being developed and is mostly complete.
What do you think are the most important contributions that you made to the trail during your time as an NPS manager and since, because you've kept working on the trail since?
You mentioned the Trail Standards Handbook that I helped to complete, and I do think that was a significant piece of work that allowed the volunteers to better understand the big picture of the trail and how it needed some standards. Another thing that I think that I was fairly successful at was always promoting trail quality and the construction of sustainable trail. There was a tendency that folks wanted to quickly rough in the trail and they said, well, we'll get back to it later and finish it. We'll grub out the stumps later. But they never got back to it, so it never happened. So I was always pushing for completing the trail to quality standards. Another thing that I'm kind of happy about is that I always was talking about how all of our trail structures, such as bridges or even puncheons, should be accessible, even though they weren't always required to be. I didn't think that they should be a bottleneck. If a mobility impaired individual was able to get their way down our rough, inaccessible trail by hook or by crook or by assistance from a partner, that when they got to a crossing over a stream or a wet area, that they shouldn't be stopped by this bottleneck, I called it. I brought a lot of training to the volunteers, so I think that was a success. And I was always trying to remind them that maintenance is critical. It seems like the volunteers like to build things, and then sometimes they tend to ignore them for a while. And I always used to say that if they don't keep up with maintenance, nature will take that trail back within 2 years' time, and it'll be lost, and all of that hard work to build it in the first place would be gone. And it's satisfying to me today when I pick up a copy of the North Star magazine to look at the pictures and the articles and see all of the really high quality looking structures that people are building all across the trail.
I think it was wonderful that you did that additional 18 years of work and kept your voice in the trail community in the way that you did. I can say on many, many occasions I was at meetings where you weren't, or out on a hike with some players, and I would hear this comment, Bill Mentke wouldn't approve that. So
that's all good and bad.
Even if it was meant bad, I knew that your impact and imprint was there, and it took to the point that in some ways you were almost that conscience sitting on their shoulder, and that was okay. That was okay. Yes. That's a lasting thing that you benefited the whole trail community on.